is Hidden Killers with Tony Ruski.
I want to address something. I keep seeing headlines, headline drops, a mother, a child dead. Before anyone reads the second sentence, three words either have already landed in the title or in the comment section or the sub headline. This is when I say this, you're going to realize you've been seeing this a lot too in the last 2 weeks. Those three words, another Lindsay Clancy. Three words, and you feel like, okay, we've identified what happened here right away. Just those three words, and you think you know. You haven't. You just swapped a woman you've never heard of for a woman you already have opinions about. Whatever actually went wrong in that house, the specific medication, the specific doctor, the specific call that got logged and never returned, you decided you already knew. I'm not blaming you. This is what's going on. This is what we're being fed in so many headlines right now. There's three words to make us just stop thinking. Another Lindsay Clancy. Oh, this is an easy one to compare. No, it's not. We need to stop doing this. What do those three words actually cost, and who's paying for them? Well, Lindsay Clancy's case involves specific medications prescribed by specific doctors who made specific clinical decisions. The next case, whatever it may be, because I keep seeing these headlines with cases that have nothing to do with Lindsay Clancy and are not really remotely like Lindsay Clancy, other than the fact it involves a mother and children, and usually death of some sort. And all of the factors that lead to there are nothing alike. The next case involves different medications, different doctors, different decisions. The only thing they share is the part that scares us too much to think past. A mother and dead children. So we stop. We stop. And we think we've made a comparison because it's too icky to really go a little bit deeper. That's not a comparison. A comparison examines two things. It examines this. This examines nothing. Say what another Lindsay Clancy actually means without the true crime vocabulary. And it's mother who went crazy and killed her kids. Andrea Yates drowned her five children in 2001. For 20 years after that, every time a mother killed her children, Yates was a name people reached for. Different women, different diagnoses, different failures. Didn't matter. Same shorthand. Yates was convicted in 2002. A retrial jury found her not guilty by reason of insanity in 2006 after hearing what postpartum psychosis actually does to a brain. In the 20 years since that case, I guess we haven't really taken that into account very strongly or understood it, because we seem more confused about it now than we did in 2006, despite understanding it more. But what we don't have, or what we do have today that we didn't have in 2006 is TikTok, is Facebook, is Instagram, is social media, YouTube, everything. Those things didn't exist back then, or they were in their very early infancy. That case got the conversation right. People heard the difference between psychosis and depression, heard how a woman that ill could still look under normal conditions, looking functional to everyone around her. Doctors, published papers, advocacy groups organized around postpartum maternal health screenings and awareness 20 years ago. People said they understood, and for a while, some of them actually did. Then 20 years later, Clancy's case arrived, and we reached for the same three words like we've never heard any of it. The awareness survived about as long as the news cycle because it was built on a name instead of an understanding. Now it's Clancy. The name changes every few years. The laziness is permanent, it seems. They're sorting a new tragedy in a box they've already closed and scrolled past. The question that would actually matter, what specifically broke here? Who specifically missed it? Which decision or failure to decide ended with children dead never really gets asked. The answer doesn't fit the comment or the title, so we don't bother asking. It's just, well, it's like this, and we move on. Evil person, right? Just, yeah. Why try to get ahead of these things and prevent the actual children from dying by helping the mother when she's begging for help? You know what? Crazy world are we living where we'd want to do that? We'd rather be offended. We'd rather be able to socially pivot and signal to our friends how good we are that we stand up for dead babies. Do you stand up for dead? I don't think you stand up for dead babies. I know I stand up for dead babies. Do you stand tall enough for dead babies? That's the real question, because I'm standing tall over here. We kind of agree, but I'm standing even taller for the dead babies, aren't you? What could you buy? Yeah, this grandstanding bullshit, when all of us are pretty much on the same page. Yes, dead babies are bad. No one is pro-dead babies. But if we'd like to not run into situations where this sort of stuff happens, we have to get ahead of it. We can't just treat women who have fallen into a state of mental illness, especially when they've begged for help, like in that case, in this case. We can't keep treating them like witches and burn them at the stake. There's a lot of scenarios in this case where I think a lot of us would feel differently. She was like, screw it. This is me. I hate the kids. They're bad. Let's kill them. Or whatever. Even a lesser version of that. Just a I don't give a shit about my kids version of this, which clearly was not this woman. Be a lot less empathy. That would show some motive. That would show a pattern of wanting to get rid of kids. However, Lindsay Clancy shows none of that. These women weren't quiet. Two-thirds of the mothers who committed filicide had a documented history of a mental disorder. More than half were symptomatic at the time and documented. Someone in the system saw it, wrote it in a chart, and didn't do anything about it, or didn't ask the right follow-up questions like a medical professional should do. But the comparison treats all of that as one diagnosis. Postpartum depression is not postpartum psychosis. Psychosis affects about 1 in 1,000 new mothers, and untreated, it carries a filicide risk that should terrify you. It's a psychiatric emergency, not a bad week. A mother who told her family she was having thoughts about hurting her children is a completely different crisis than a mother who did everything because the culture told her good mothers don't feel that way. Different diagnosis, different failure, different person who could have done something and didn't. And the mother who told people and the mother who hid it both needed different interventions that they didn't get. The comparison takes 100 different breakdowns and files them under one word, snapped. 41% of mothers with postpartum depression admitted to thoughts about harming their child. In studies where researchers actually asked them, 41%, not rare, not unheard of. And when those researchers asked the clinicians how common those thoughts were, the clinicians underestimated it. Women were telling the truth, and the women's own picture of the problem was smaller than the actual problem. That means its capacity to respond was designed for a crisis it believed was rarer than it was. A woman who found the courage to say something walked into a system that already decided her experience was very uncommon. So the odds of you actually feeling that way, probably not. We're going to treat it more like this over here because we really don't want to deal with what actually might be happening over here. We do this. This is human. This is very human. We all do this shit. Someone comes to you, your kid comes to you, your wife comes to you, a loved one comes to you, your business associate comes to you, your employee, your coworker, whatever, comes to you with something, and it's uncomfortable, and it's kind of icky, and you're like, I don't want to deal with this right now. I don't ever want to really deal with this. So we tell ourselves, it's probably not as bad as it's being made out to be. And sometimes it's not. People do catastrophize things. And if you're someone who tends to catastrophize things like myself, sometimes you tell yourself, when it gets kind of bad or too bad, you're like, maybe it's not quite that bad. We're not good at putting the actual weight on the crises that are directly in front of us. We as humans are not good at this skill. We are not. Until it bites us in the ass so many times, and then when it actually is in front of us, we're like, how do you not see this? And people are like, huh? That's learned experience right there, once you've been down the road a few times. Unfortunately, everybody's got to go through it the first. Hopefully they don't ever have to, but if they do, it is a first. But we oftentimes, we don't see how bad it can get. The blind spot wasn't a mistake. It was built into the clinical assumptions. Then comes the blame. Providers saw the symptoms, documented the deterioration, and moved on to the next patient. And after all of that, we decided she didn't warn us. She didn't try hard enough. She should have done more. She told people, and they put it in her chart and moved on. Her punishment for being failed by every system that existed to catch. This is being blamed for not screaming louder at people who weren't listening. More than 20 countries have laws that distinguish between a mother who kills during a postpartum psychiatric crisis and one who plans a murder with a clear mind. Those laws create a legal category that treats postpartum psychiatric crisis as a medical reality. They direct a mother in crisis to a forensic facility where she receives treatment and monitoring instead of a prison, where she gets violated and deteriorates further. You know, America's idea of rehabilitation. We don't have that. Our legal system gives you two options, guilty or not guilty by reason of insanity, with nothing between premeditation and a complete break from reality. Another Lindsay Clancy fits that binary perfectly. Crazy or evil, pick one. No room for the truth that a woman can be desperately ill and desperately telling people she's ill and still be failed by everyone who heard her. We want justice for those children, do we? Because justice requires specifics, and specifics require more than three words. If what happened to those kids is just another version of something you already processed, you've decided they're not worth their own answer. You use their deaths to confirm something you believe before you learn their names. Justice for a child means asking why the system that existed to protect them didn't. Which appointment should have triggered the intervention? Which screening failed? Which handoff between providers dropped the information that might have saved them? And in some cases, how did the mother actually fail them? Because there's plenty of cases where that happens. And identifying that clearly and being smart enough and understanding enough to know the difference. I mean, specific doctors answering specific questions about specific decisions they made with specific information they had. A lazy comparison skips all that, blames one person, and every institution walks away clean. The reflex that makes someone a type, another Lindsay Clancy, is the same reflex that made a nurse's concerns go unanswered, unescalated. Same reflex that let a note sit in a chart without a follow-up. Same reflex that absorbed a family's fear into a whole, she'll bounce back. Every one of these cases has a paper trail. Appointments kept, prescriptions filled, calls made to people who are supposed to know what to do. We talk about the system failing like it's weather. It isn't. It's a specific nurse who flagged a specific concern to a specific supervisor who decided it didn't meet the threshold. Every one of those failures has a name attached to it, a desk it sat on, and a moment when someone could have picked up the phone. The information was there, every appointment, every prescription, every concern logged. What wasn't there was someone willing to sit with what it meant and act before it was too late. And this is a situation where she reached out in every way possible. I get it. I get it in the situations where they don't, where there is no ask for help, over and 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 over. I get that. And there's plenty of mothers who just do this to their children, and yes, they should burn for all of eternity. But you know what? There's a difference. And it helps no one by not seeing that, or not even asking, or not even trying to look. Reach out, talk to someone. That's the line after every one of these stories. We love that line. If you need help, call this number. Guess what? She did. She did reach out, and she did talk to someone, and the someone she talked to documented it, noted it, and clocked it. That message assumes the system works once you ask. These cases are what happens when you ask and the system doesn't. The entire burden of surviving landed on the sickest person in the room. We print reach out on posters and put it at the end of every news segment about cases like these. And when she follows those instructions and the system drops her, we tell her she just didn't follow them hard enough. She's another Lori Vallow. The hospital documented her and didn't act. We read about her and didn't think. The hospital got investigated for it. We got likes. It's the same act. Hearing a woman's name and deciding you know the story before she's done telling it. When a provider does that and someone dies, there's a review board. When we do it from the couch, it's a heart emoji. The comparison doesn't describe what went wrong. The comparison is what went wrong. The same refusal to look deeper, repeated by different people in a different room. Three words used by people who consider themselves compassionate, informed, engaged. People who follow the case, share the articles, carry the opinions. Comparison. That is the furthest thing from accurate. Compassion has one job those three words won't do. You have to look at something long enough to see what it actually is, not what it reminds you of. The children deserve names, not a category. The woman deserves specifics, not a shorthand. And we need to figure out why we keep reaching for the version that lets us stop thinking. Because that version is how we got here. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. If you're not already following the podcast, the audio form, you can take us with you wherever you go. You can listen to us, in the car, wherever you're in the gym, working out, whatever it may be on your devices. Take us with you. The link, you can scan the QR code right there on the video. If you're watching us on YouTube, takes you to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and hit subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. I look forward to continuing that conversation, though, on Substack and YouTube. Those links are in the description. Tell me what you think. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.